Hey there, Knicks fans.
How you doing?
It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode. The penultimate regular season episode, or I guess maybe the last regular season episode, depending on you want to talk about when we record it versus when we air it. I'm already getting off the rails. Jeremy Cohen, of course, my co-host, is here with me. What is this, the penultimate regular season episode, or is this the last regular season episode?
No, it should be the penultimate because we're recording after next week's game, which is the season finale.
Yes, we're recording, but they will not hear that. The listeners will not hear that until after the regular season has ended.
That's true. So it's the penultimate episode, but it is the ultimate mid-season episode. Regular season wise, this is all exciting stuff. This is what the people come
this
for.
This is what
right?
the people come for, to hear our nonsensical banter about nothing. goodness gracious. So, first and foremost, happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. Before we get to talk about the Knicks, for anybody watching on the YouTube, I am, as you could probably tell, not in my usual confines because I am visiting my mom in the city. And we are, the other thing we should say, is we are recording this on, a little bit after noon on Saturday, because we are, Jeremy and myself, not Andrew so much, mm-mm, mostly just Jeremy and me, are good sons. And we want to spend a Mother's Day give the appropriate amount of time. I also have a wife who is actually breastfeeding not 8 feet from me right now. Fun fact for all of those. What are you scratching our daughter's head? I can't even tell what something's going on there. So it's, obviously we have obligations and things that we want to do on Mother's Day. So this will not be reflective of the Clippers outcome. I guess it's the short way to say it. Any reflections on Mother's Day from you, Jeremy, before we get to the Knicks?
Big fan of mothers. Mothers are great.
Yes.
I love my own. She is my family's rock and excited for her to have a big day. Also grandmothers out there too. Unfortunately, I no longer have grandmothers.
Me neither.
But yeah, gotta love mothers.
Gotta love moms. And this was a mother of a week for the Knicks.
They don't. Damn it, John.
That's why they pay me the big bucks, Jeremy. my wife's laughing at me. So quick week in review. So the Knicks played four games this week, and it'll be five at the time that you are listening to this. I believe, this is live podcasting, folks. Are we releasing this episode before tomorrow? I'm not even sure.
I thought that's what Andrew said, but
You know what? Yeah. We'll just roll with it. Yeah. The Knicks have played the four games since the last time we spoke to you, as of when we are talking to you right now. They obviously dismantled the Rockets. They won what ended up being fairly convincingly against the Grizzlies, although that game was a lot closer than the final score would indicate. And then they had two not so fun outings against the Denver Nuggets and against the Phoenix Suns. I'll just start here. If for me, again, hindsight's 2020. If someone had told me when we were recording last week's show that the Knicks were going to smoke the Rockets, win comfortably against the Grizzlies, and play six quarters of really solid basketball, like really solid basketball against the two teams that they played, I would have said like, and they would have gone 2-2. I would have been like, I can't see a scenario where I'm going to be upset with that. So sitting here today, again, not knowing what's going to happen with the Clippers, but like, again, I think we've come far enough this season that as long as they show up against the Clippers and play with requisite effort and show up, we'll probably be fine with that. Although we'll get into the playoff scenario stuff in a little bit. How would you have felt if someone had told you that a week ago?
You mean the team that was expected to be in the basement is figuring out ways to go on the road and at least play some sense of competitive basketball? And by the way, they're still in fourth place in the East.
Yep.
Yeah, I would be very okay with that. This
wow,
season,
that was a lot of snark.
That was true.
That was actually, that's like top five snark from this season from you, which is saying something. Because
fortunately, I haven't had many reasons to be snarky.
This is true.
This is a good team. It's a good Knicks basketball team that has so much room for improvement. And that's not a knock against them. That's just simply the way that they are operating. It's on full cylinders for what they can do. But this is why there's such a difference between the bad teams, the okay teams, and the great teams. The gap between the great teams and the okay teams is vast. Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing it, like we've seen the Knicks play against these kind of like upper echelon teams and win games, right? They won two against the Bucks, although one was with a lot of players sitting. And the first one was, you know, at the very beginning of the season when things just aren't as cohesive, right?
I mean, when you outshoot a team from three, like 48% to like 6%, whatever the hell that discrepancy was, like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Right. The Utah game, that was an exciting comeback win, a win nonetheless, but, you know, march into Utah and it's kind of a bloodbath. Denver, both games are tough. We saw the Clippers game. They came close, but it wasn't it. The Lakers,
arguably their best played, most well-played game of the year, I think, that Clippers game.
Yeah, and end to end, it was pretty sound.
And they couldn't, I mean, they lost by 15, you know, so.
Right. I mean, what we're talking about here is that the Knicks do not have a second All-Star. That's the reality of it. And that's just true. And they'll get there eventually. I believe that by free agency or by trade, hopefully even by draft, if RJ Barrett continues to come along, I think we can look at an opportunity where things just grow massively. But right now, the Knicks are just an all-star short of hanging with these teams, and that's totally okay.
Can I ask you a quick question? Is it fair to say, I'm not saying the Suns would have the Knicks record if they didn't have Chris Paul, but just on talent alone, is it fair to say that if you took Chris Paul off the Suns, the Knicks and Suns would be about equally talented all the way down the roster?
Around there. I think the Suns are kind of like still a year ahead of where the Knicks would have been. Like, and you could say, well, look at the Suns last year and they weren't good. But right. And I completely understand that. But it's the sort of thing where the Suns, I feel like, also have older players and the Knicks don't. Right. Like, yeah, you can talk about Obi for sure. But the Suns have typically also drafted a lot of the kind of like their best supporting players, like Mikal Bridges, who is developing into a star, Cam Johnson, who's surprising a lot of people. Like, those are older players when they were drafted. And I think Obi for sure, but also Obi's a late bloomer.
Different. And then, we've talked about this before. Right. Different animal.
And quickly, I mean, he's 21 years old and he's showing great signs. But the fact is that he's still on the younger side. You need time to get to, like, you know, 26, 27, when that's usually around where you hit your prime. So that's why I think that the Suns are a little bit further along without Chris Paul.
Sure.
But, you know, again, I don't think they're, without Chris Paul, they're that different in terms of record, right? In fact, if anything, based on what we saw last year, you could then say, well, maybe it's the opposite. So yeah, if adding one of the best floor generals of all time to your team makes you the second best team in the East right now, then that would have done awesome things for the Knicks.
Oh, I'm not
arguing against that, obviously.
No, I'm not arguing. We've had the Chris, what would the Knicks be with Chris Paul, and would that have been for the best or not this season? We've talked about that before. I'm just talking about theoretically, like, just if, given that Chris Paul is ostensibly an MVP candidate, is going to make an All-NBA team, and we've played two games against that team. One, it was a one possession game with under a minute left, and as we were recording this last night, they had a 7-point lead with under a minute to go in the third quarter on the road against that team. I think, and if you look at the rest of the roster, and it's like, all right, Devin Booker, Julius Randle, more somewhat even, RJ Barrett, Mikal Bridges. I know we have much higher hopes for RJ Barrett in the future, but this season, just talk about their impact on the court this season, I would say that those two guys are at least comparable. And then you go down the list, like, what is Ayton's impact versus what Quickley's impact is? What is Jay Crowder's impact versus what, you know, Alec Burks or Reggie Bullitt? And it's like, that's what I was kind of angling at. So I think it's really respectable that the Knicks went in there and did what they did. Also, we should note, if someone had told us again last week what was going to happen, and then, by the way, they would have said Quickley and Burks were going to miss the Suns game, and they would have that lead down this, like, again, we would have signed for it.
One of the huge differences also between the Suns and the Knicks is that the Suns capitalized on the 2018 draft and the Knicks didn't. Yeah. That's a huge thing. I mean, if Kevin Knox is not Kevin Knox, or if the Knicks pick any player really in that range other than Kevin Knox, except for Jerome Robinson, even if they pick Mikal Bridges, then the Suns...
Miles Bridges?
No, I'm saying, well, Mikal went to Phoenix.
No, eventually. I'm saying they could have taken Mikal Bridges, they could have taken Miles Bridges, and then obviously... the SGA, guy who's putting up 25 a game. Right. Oh, and SGA.
Right. So there's a Knicks player who
fucked the pooch. Oh god.
Yeah, not great. But that's the thing. If the Knicks get any of those players, then we're looking at a very different conversation here. I mean, obviously you could then say, well, how does that affect 2019 with RJ and everything else? And who knows what the leadership position is. I'm at peace with it. That's fine. But that's, I think what it comes down to is that the Suns, because they drafted Josh Jackson, who is a worse player than Frankie Ntilikina. And they've been able to be just fine. They draft Dragan Bender. I mean, they have had so many misses.
Alex Len.
Right. We've seen the Knicks have those types of misses. Yeah. And speaking of Frank, I want to talk quickly about the game in terms of one thing in terms of defense.
Please.
So, I mean, I was just curious in terms of the matchup numbers that came from last night. Because, you know, I mean, defense seemed to be a huge problem across the board. But Chris Paul, you know, MVP candidate, who's not going to put up astounding numbers, but it's the sort of thing where he's able to lead his team. So in terms of Chris Paul being defended, he was defended by Frank Ntilikina for a minute and 39 seconds.
Okay.
You know how many points the Suns scored as a whole when Frank Ntilikina was guarding Chris Paul specifically?
How many?
Four. Four points. Okay. Now, of course, Ntilikina gave the Knicks nothing really on offense except maybe beautiful bounce passes. You said it was a minute.
Hold on.
It's a minute and 39 seconds, you know, when combined with all the opportunities, you know, because players switch and everything. But I'm saying that That's not a, it sounds like a short period of time. Yeah. It really isn't, because here's the other factor. Derrick Rose guarded Chris Paul one-on-one for a minute and 47 seconds.
Okay.
And the Suns scored 21 points when that matchup was occurring. But the thing is, Rose was scoring. So you
wait
take
a minute.
The
hold on.
Bat.
You're going to have to pretend I'm an idiot.
Okay.
A minute and 40 something seconds, 21. That's not possible.
It is. It's team points. So, like
yeah,
a pass,
but for,
like
for only assist? For only like you can't how many it takes like I don't know 5, 6, 7, 8 possessions to score over 20 points.
Right. I'm saying it's when it's one on one. There could be a lot of switching, pick and roll, whatever it might be. The whole point.
Right.
I
think
I'm
getting hung up on the how they're doing the math. But all right. So basically Frank Ntilikina did a much better job on Chris Paul than Derrick Rose. Yes.
Right. But then it gets even crazier because while Elfrid Payton spent less time on guarding Chris Paul Elfrid Payton defended Chris Paul for a longer period of time than Derrick Rose.
Mm-hmm.
So for point per minute, because he let up 23 team points, he actually did a better job defending Chris Paul than Rose did, but he had nothing going on offense. And I think one of the big things from last night, and also I should add out that Payton and Noel were just abysmal in terms of guarding the pick and roll.
Yes.
Gassed every single
time. Could not be worse.
Right. So I think one of the frustrating things about last night, and it kind of comes to a head in terms of how do the Knicks upgrade at their point guard position eventually, because Rose isn't going to start and he's not going to log more than maybe like 28, 30 minutes a game, unless it's roughly playoff time, is solving that position, because there really was no perfect option. And, Bullock was getting torched by Booker again, and RJ was getting torched by Mikal Bridges again. So, you know, like Burks would have done a nice job. And I think that's where things really hurt with him. I guess the whole point being, it's like, you know, I am very upset at how everything was at the point guard position, at least defensively, but there really wasn't a happy medium that could have been solved. And as you said, with the third quarter, it just seemed like with that last minute of play, or even the last 15 seconds, that was when the game slipped away and the better team pulled ahead. And I think that's what bothered me the most. It wasn't the competitive quarters. It wasn't the losing. It was really just the fact that it was there and the Knicks were just deflated, it seemed, from their morale. And then it just went haywire from
there. I think a lot went into it. I think how the third quarter ended in terms of RJ with that turnovers, and I'm not going to put it on RJ. It was a brain fart. But even the minute before that, giving up the points that they did, it did seep into the fourth and whatnot. To me, the more like the Frank thing is interesting, because I said it on the post game, and I kind of referenced it. I got some pushback on Twitter today. I was a little frustrated, and I said, like, look, I'm done with the Frank conversation. Meaning, not that I'm like out on him as a player in terms of like what he could bring. And I still think he could help a team
in the right situation, playing 10, 15, 20 minutes a night on the right team. And I think that could be this team, depending on what they do with moves in the future. But just like for those of us who have been just wanting him to get an opportunity, jumping up and down at, for him to get an opportunity, he got an opportunity last night against the Suns. And it's just, I guess because they've reached this new level offensively over the last month and a half, roughly, a little bit less, it was more stark than ever how much of a drop-off you get on offense when he's in there. Because he's just, if he's not hitting shots, and again, it was only two shots last night or against the Suns, and he didn't hit them. I'm not, I mean, look, one of those shots goes down, maybe is it a different conversation, but it's just, he doesn't give this particular team, he doesn't give them enough on offense, I think, to justify the what he brings on the defensive end. And that's not to say that I wouldn't still rather see him than Elfrid Payton. I think all of us would rather see him than Elfrid Payton. But where I'm at is like, I'm thinking about the idealized version of this team in the playoffs. To me, it's a nine-man rotation, and Frank's not in it, and Elfrid Payton's not in it. They're both not in it. And you have guys out there who, because we've seen this team, obviously, been able to defend at a top five level with those other guys. Elfrid Payton, the numbers indicate, and I would argue the eye test backs it up, is one of their worst defensive players. So, you know, like we don't, and obviously on offense, he's what he is. And I don't think they, you know, I don't think they need Frank right now for his defense, unless you're comparing it to Elf. I understand the Rose numbers, but at the same time, they need Rose on offense. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure this team as currently constructed is such that I'm going to sit here and continue to argue like Frank Ntilikina needs minutes. I just can't. I don't have it in me. Maybe you can.
Oh, it's harder to do, especially when you're seeing a team that's this good defensively without him. Like, yeah. That's the other thing. It was so before it was like, well, the Knicks could use Frank because their defense could use the work. And now it's like, well, yeah, I mean, he helps, but then what are you losing on the offense? Because if you can find a way to actually replace him schematically on defense, but you're playing 4-on-5 offensively, but you're still doing that with Elfrid Payton. So you could talk in circles about why none of these options maybe are good long-term fits or even short-term either to an extent. But, you know, I mean, it is tough because you want to see, you know, I want to see Kevin Knox shine too, but you have to be realistic with what they're going to bring. And I mean, Frank could be back. Absolutely. I wouldn't necessarily bet money on it. I think it would be in a
I would talk 11th
or 12th man role.
Because I want you to have your money. I want you to keep your money. Well, I don't want you to throw money in the garbage. So please don't bet on Frank coming back.
I guess it all comes down to opportunity, right? Over the summer. If a team like Toronto says, hey, we'd love to use you as 7th, 8th man defensive specialist. Let's do that. That's better than him being on the bench and earning around the same money of, you know, like $2-3 million at that point. And that's the thing. I thought he was going to earn more, but he was injured. And then he didn't play point, and now he's not playing at all. And when he's playing, I get it. It's tough to go from the bench to you know, having to stay ready and then not being able to perform because you don't get the time. But again, you have to stay ready. And if you're not performing, if you're scoring as many points as the two of us and everyone listening, then in the last, what, like 5 or 6 games, then that's a problem. You can't sugarcoat that.
No, you can't. Over under, you get even odds. Over under 1.5 seasons worth of guaranteed money Frank gets from somebody this offseason. You're taking the under, right?
No, I'm taking the over.
You think some team out there gives him 2 years of guaranteed money?
Well, if Chris Dunn can get 2 years and he hasn't played a single second this entire year.
Yeah, but Chris Dunn showed more last season than Frank has shown this season. Opportunity was there.
I'd argue Stanley Johnson hasn't necessarily shown that much. He got a 2-year contract.
Did Stanley get 2 guaranteed?
Well, if we're talking guaranteed, then
I'm saying 2 years guaranteed money.
Again, I think if it's a team option, that's a different story. Like I could see another team, unless you don't
count.
That's
not guaranteed money.
All right, then in that case, no, I don't think he would.
Okay, so we're in agreement because I don't think he's getting 2 years guaranteed from anybody in the league.
I think he'd get 2-year deal, but the second would be non-guaranteed, as you're saying, or a team option of sorts. Yeah.
All right. Some news this week. We'll go through it. I guess we'll start. I don't want to talk. Do we have to talk about this Austin Rivers thing?
Why don't we make it short and sweet?
Please.
The whole thing with Austin Rivers, look, I kind of wondered if there was something maybe going on that was more than meets the eye, and the Knicks were doing a great job of kind of hiding it, because Austin Rivers stepped aside for a while. And it was also around the time where his child was born. So I thought maybe it has something to do with the kid, and hopefully the health of the baby and everything like that. But
which is fine, but
right, of course. Yeah. It was more that he kind of like made it into something bigger than it was from what we publicly know, right? Basically, it was you didn't perform. You showed up maybe once every Utah game, and then you slipped away into oblivion. And also Alec Burks came back, so we didn't really need you, Austin. Yeah. And it's a weird dichotomy, because he raves about the Knicks and says nothing but great things. And then, of course, he gets cut. And then he's like, well, you know, stuff went down. It reminded me of Kristaps when he was saying, like, the truth will come out eventually.
That's was exactly like that. That's exactly what it reminded me of.
And I was like, okay, that's great, dude. You're on another team. So I don't know, you could just be happy there. But I get it. The Knicks are in town, so you want to talk about it. It just felt like it stoked more flames than it needed to. It could have just been like, oh, wow, Austin Rivers torched the team that dumped him early in the year. Like, that's a fine narrative. I didn't understand why he nested. Was like, well, I could go there, but I'm not going to, you know, things happen. It's whatever. It's like, all right, that's okay. But you can focus on the now. That's fine too.
I don't care. I'm there are some stories that I don't care. Hey. I'm going down to the supermarket. Oh, okay. So I've now been tasked with watching the baby while podcasting. I could do this. Oh, she's sleeping. I believe you. Okay. Yeah, we could do this. Me and Jeremy got this together.
Delora, could you pick me something up?
Jeremy wants you to pick him up a diet soda.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, Austin Rivers, go away. Luka Vildoza, someone I'm much more interested to talk about than Austin Rivers. So, 4-year contract, which is deceiving on several levels. One, four years, $13 million. One of those years is this year, so it's like basically this year is the you're paying the right to go ahead of free agency to sign him, I think is probably the best way to say it. And you had money to spend and you're spending it this year to not have to compete with, again, ostensibly other teams who might want to have signed him this summer. So that's great. Also, none of the money is guaranteed other than the year that he's getting right now. The Mark Berman reported that the guarantee date for the following year of his contract, which is next season, is on the eve of the first game of next year, which is great because that means they get a lot of time to watch him in the Olympics, watch him in training camp, watch him in preseason before they have to decide, are they guaranteeing more money? And he is not going to be here this year. Tom Thibodeau has all but said that. What I wanted to ask you before I get your, I want to get your general thoughts, but specifically, I read it as his, like, all three of his years won't be guaranteed. It'll just be next season will be guaranteed if they keep him on the team. Like, you, contracts don't work in the NBA where you guarantee multiple years at once, right?
Right. It's like the Austin Rivers contract, actually.
Yeah, it's year by year.
Right.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I'm sure you like the move.
I love it. Yeah. Basically everything I wanted about this move, it seems to have, right? So yeah. For starters, basically this 1 year, yes, it's a way to get the Knicks to get over their cap floor, which they did. Yep. It's not prorated. The way that prorated would work is if it's like a veteran minimum contract or an exception, that would typically be more prorated. This is not a prorated deal.
So he gets the full amount that he's owed this year, as opposed to it's a $4 million contract. You played in 25% of the games. You're getting $1 million. This is exactly the full amount.
He gets everything. It's as if he would have signed last year. Same amount.
Yeah.
I was watching something that Bobby Marks did, and I haven't seen this elsewhere, so I'd like to see it confirmed in other places. But Bobby was basically saying that this is a descending deal, which is phenomenal. His numbers seemed a little off based on what it was, if it wasn't 13.6 million as was reported, but regardless, that seems to be the indication, okay. Which to me is fantastic because you're using all the cap space that you have right now. And it's dwindling as time goes on and you're able to create more space for someone bigger. So I loved that move. It's just, it, it fills the need. I'm curious what it does for a player like Alec Burks. I don't know if he'll be back, but that can be another conversation for another day.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it right now, but I've been thinking a lot about the Burks versus Bullock thing. And like, is it necessary that both of those guys are back? And it feels like Bullock is starting to be the more integral of the two to return next year. And if Feldoza gives you some of the stuff that Burks did in terms of ball handling, point guard play, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
So it's a great signing. I'm really happy with it. I'm excited for Clyde to say Vildozer quite often. Vildozer, styling and profiling. Something along those lines.
I think he's going to go with the Luca a lot. I think he's just going to go with the first name.
He could. Although Vildozer is such low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, but...
There's already a Luca. That's the thing.
I know, but...
a better Luca on the Knicks, but...
I could hear him, Clyde, with the U, but I could also hear him with the O in Vildoza. I want to hear both. We'll see. We'll revisit this next season. One more bit of news. I think these two things go together. So Julius Randle in the news for two reasons. One, Brian Windhorst came out with a story basically detailing the contract situation, which we've talked about already extensively on this podcast, which is that if the Knicks re-sign Julius Randle for the most money they can this summer, with all the incentives in the world, it could go up to $140 million total. That includes next year, which is for 19 point whatever, I think, 19.8? Is that
more, assuming the Knicks make the playoffs. It'll be closer to 21.7 or something.
Yes. But the base figure is nice. And then it's the bonus for the All-Star and the playoffs. So it's on top. So it's another 120 on top of that, plus whatever the bonuses are, versus if he waits to sign an extension in the summer of 2022, without getting into the contractual nuances of this, it's going to be able to sign for about $100 million more. The one bit of news in there was that the Knicks and Julius Randle plan to talk this summer, my first instinct was to be like, ooh, that's a great sign. How exciting. And then I'm like, well, this is one big happy family in terms of the team president, the agent, Julius Randle, like, sure, they'll talk. Doesn't mean fuck's worth of anything.
Yeah.
I want to mention the other component, which is unrelated on its face, but I think is kind of related, which is all NBA. They changed the rules this year, They got futzy with the positional designations. So now people are going to be able to essentially put whoever the hell they want on the NBA teams, irrespective of what positions they actually play in the league. Exemplified by the fact that now, if people want to vote Joel Embiid as a forward, even though Joel Embiid has spent precisely 0 minutes at forward this season, and Jokic as well, people will be able to do that. They're going to be able to put Jason Tatum at guard. They're going to be able to put, I'm trying to think, there's a bunch of them. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that are worth mentioning explicitly. Oh, yeah. Let me read the guys who are available. You could put it guard and forward. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Zach LaVine, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Chris Middleton, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker. Now, we both think that Julius Randle is going to get more votes than a lot of those guys. And I don't think this is going to have too big of an effect unless voters get cute with Embiid. And if voters get cute with Embiid and they put him as a starting forward next to Giannis, then I think there's a chance that Randle gets left off. At the very least, I think this greatly increases the odds that he ends up on third team All-NBA. Now, before I turn it over to you, why did I bring all this up with the contract stuff? Because I know he's not Supermax eligible. I know the All-NBA does not have any black and white bearing on the number that the Knicks can offer him. But if you're an All-NBA player, you're a max player. Like that is the reality of the situation in the NBA today. If you make an All-NBA team, you're a max guy. As you should be, because there's not that many All-NBA guys out there. And there's a lot of guys getting max money. So the long and the short of it is, I'd be surprised if he extended the summer. With the one caveat, I think there's one scenario where he could, but before I say it, I'll turn it over to you because I've been talking for a while.
You're right. Randall is not Supermax eligible. He was not drafted by the Knicks and he was not acquired by the Knicks on his rookie contract. So he cannot earn the 35% salary cap max that a lot of people seem to think that he can. It's not possible. The only amount that he can earn if he signed on the dotted line would be like $26 million. That'd be the max. If he waited till 2022, even with the All-NBA berth, that would still be like the 30% max threshold. He's a max player, no doubt about it. And I was surprised to see how many people were kind of arguing against it, saying like, well, it's one season. Let's see if he continues. I was like, well, what do you think is really going to disappear? Because the passing and the vision is incredible. His ability to find open guys, especially in the quarter, has been great. There's obviously things for him to work on for sure, but we're looking at a player who's just absolutely coming into his own. And I think the biggest thing that people have to worry about is the shooting. But then I look at it, it's like, well, there are players who are doing just fine.
I think he's
without
real.
The ability to hit a pull-up jumper at a 41 or so percent clip, or at least shoot from 41% or so from three, for example.
Well, could we just say, yes, there are players who are doing absolutely fine. The shooting that he has displayed this year, that to that level with the step back, with the confidence, with the volume, all of that stuff at this accuracy, I think is the difference between him being a top.
He's probably top 15 and 25.
I was thinking, do I want to say 10? Do I want to say 12? Do I want to say 15? Whatever. Pick your number. And a top 20 to 25-ish player, which there's a big difference between top 15 and top 25 players in the NBA in terms of like where your ceiling is and
But there's not a big difference in terms of what they're earning, which is they're all getting max salaries.
That's okay. Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the thing.
Although, hold on. The ones on the bottom end of that are some of the ones where you're like, man, I really kind of wish I wasn't paying this person max money. Whereas the ones on the higher end of it, you're like, I'm cool. Take the money. We're good.
So the big thing here is I had it lined up perfectly. I was telling you, John, that this offseason, I had like a week or so after the season would end, I had a perfect Randall contract article ready to go.
You did.
And Windhorse was like, hey, Jeremy, how about I just fuck up your Thursday completely?
He took it and he wiped his ass with it.
Yeah. And it's fine because it actually made the article better. And it'll be out this week. Also, a Vildoza thing coming out. But the whole point is that, you know, what a max contract is as well is a different conversation, because Julius Randle is a max player. We're talking about $26 million, which is the most he could make right now if he signed on the dotted line. I think people are just getting a little skittish about the 34 range if he becomes a free agent in 2022. The big thing, and I don't want – Andrew's going to kill me because there's a reason why I can't – I don't want to say it because it would affect a future piece that I have in mind. But a big thing in terms of the reason why the Knicks would need to sign Randle this offseason, at least to a short extension, is because that's how they can capitalize on 2022, which is when they need to maximize their money as best as possible. The Knicks need to create as much cap space as possible in 2022. That is the summer to go in, which is why the Knicks should say to someone like Randall, like, hey, let's get you on that max contract for that year. Let's give you even a 1 year extension. And then from there, they could figure out if they want to make it 2 years, if they want to include an opt out or what. Because the basically the best way of phrasing it is, we'll pay you for 2 years. You can get whatever star that we can get our hands on to play around you. And then 2024, when you have 10 plus years of experience, or 10 years in this case, you can get a 35% max contract. And you can get a 5-year deal worth a ton of money. I'm talking about a lot of money. And that's basically the selling point. Whereas like, we can win with you, but we need you for 1 year to take you'll get a raise, but it won't be that raise. That won't be the time. And that's the thing. I mean, Randall could wind up making $350 million plus dollars over a 10-year career with the Knicks from 2024 to 2029 or whatever. So it's like, that's something for him to think about, being able to win and still getting paid. And that's why I think he should strongly consider it. but we'll see.
I think there's a possibility he tacks on two more years with the second year being a player option.
Right.
To his contract right now, but you're taking a risk with injury if you're Julius Randle. That's the big thing.
Yes.
And there would have to be some kind of a handshake thing with like the Knicks are going to like you're going to get the max. Like we're giving you the max down the line.
But here's the thing about the injury factor. I mean, Randle's missed 21 games over 6 years.
I know.
So
I know.
It's not like an Anthony Davis situation. Hold on.
The man also broke his leg his first time.
Right, but that is that was a freak accident, and he's shown consistent health.
I know. I think there's a possibility, but I would not bet on it.
I don't know. That's the thing. I kind of would.
Bet on that. Okay, I hope you're right. Well,
look, we're talking about a player again who can see the long-term earning potential.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's
he wants to win now either.
And he wants to win.
He wants to win here.
This is the first time he has made the playoffs or will have made the playoffs in his now 7-year career.
He's become a household name.
Right.
Now.
And why would you leave New York? Because it's basically like, oh, you're telling me that not only can I still get paid and be the leader in this clubhouse and be here long-term, I can get even more money. And also, you know, if you have success here, you're going to see endorsements. You're going to see more clout. You're going to have higher earning
cover of Slam Magazine.
There you go. So, it's not even, I don't want to say it's a sacrifice. It is. It is a sacrifice though, but it's a modest
risk. There is some risk.
There's risk in everything in life.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see what he does. Before we just finish up with the playoff implications and then predictions, Obi Toppin is Julius Randle's backup. We are certainly talking like one way or another, Julius Randle is going to be a Knick for the foreseeable future. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Obi Toppin was drafted to be his replacement. Whether that's ever going to be acknowledged or not, we'll see. It's been a disappointing season, but I would argue that the last handful of games or so, and specifically some the moments he had against Phoenix, might be his high point of the year. He is now looking like a guy who is, dare I say, helpful on defense. He's certainly not hurting them on defense. He's more comfortable on offense. The kinship with Rose is very real. I like that we're seeing this, because I would hate for the narrative tied to this season to be, man, great Knicks stuff. You love Rose, Tibbs, Randle, but man, did they fuck up that pick? I would just hate if that was out there. And I feel like with what we're getting from Obi recently, I don't think that's going to be out there. I think they're going to be able to avoid that by the skin of their teeth. And you know me, I'm a big narratives guy. I think narratives matter. And I think, you know, more importantly, moving forward, and look, we don't need to get into specifics now, but like there is a world where Obi Toppin and Julius Randle can both be members of the Knicks and it work. And it's not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. I think, and again, a lot of that's going to have to do with defense. Can you stick him out there for whatever, 5, 8, 10 minutes a game in a backup five? I know regardless of the tough questions that may be in line moving forward, I'm happy that I get to ask those questions now about Obi Toppin, because what we're seeing on the court is really encouraging. So shout out to Obi Toppin.
Yeah. I think that there will come a point where people just kind of look at his stats on the whole year and be like, what did Obi Toppin contribute? And it's a shame, because when you actually look at what he's done and watch the games, he's made huge strides. It seems since that Dallas game, I mean, that dunk seemed to set everything off into motion, and he's looked comfortable. And I thought that, you know, end to end, that sequence where he was guarding Paul, got the block. I mean, even there, you know, I can't remember if it was Kenny Albert or Clyde who said like he got the matchup, Paul got the matchup he wanted.
Yeah.
Toppin winds up blocking his shot.
Yeah.
Ball gets thrown. You know, he makes a miraculous catch because he was overthrown and winds up with the dunk. And to me, if that's not the potential Obi Toppin experience that we are looking for, then I don't know what is necessarily, because what he's been able to do, he's just looking comfortable. The shot is coming around. He's hitting corner threes now, which was a huge issue for him beforehand.
So, confidently putting up corner three pointers.
Right. So that, you know, again, it's like it's game by game and the stats won't show it necessarily, but the confidence is going to be there. And I believe in him and I'm happy that he's thriving, or at least in, you know, in his role, he's thriving. He's not going to be the type of guy right now who can log necessarily 20 minutes, although we don't know because Julius Randle is blocking him, and there are worse problems to have than Julius Randle blocking Obi Toppin.
You're, as I often do, I'll borrow from something Zach Lowe said on, actually, no, it might have been in a column. I don't know. My low content is running together. He was talking about Josh Green, I think it was in his 10 things, on Dallas, and talking about with young players, you're looking for not necessarily like how many minutes are getting and how many points are putting up, but like when the guy gets time, does it look like he knows what he's doing out there? And does it look like he belongs out there? And with Obi Toppin, I think we could look at the minutes he's getting now and we could say, okay, he has earned those minutes. These are good minutes. And he's good in them. So good stuff from Obi. All right, let's bring it home with our assessment of the one thing that is probably the first thing on everybody's mind right now, which is playoff positioning. So, I just realized the Nets and the Bucks have moved ahead of the Nets. I didn't realize until I'm just looking at that. Wow.
The Bucks have the tiebreaker thanks to beating the Nets both times.
So, as we are recording this right now, the Knicks are still in fourth. That could change by the end of the weekend, of course. But the other key event that happened on Friday night was the Celtics lost a game to the Bulls, handily, by the way. They ended up losing close to 20. They continue to be paper tigers as they have been all year. That was significant. And I the reason I think it was significant is because for me right now, and I'll ask you this, Jeremy, and then I'll finish up what I'm saying. I think while the goalposts have been moved several times, if the Knicks get in one of the top six seeds, this, like, everybody signed for it. Everybody dance in the streets. Are you still like, no, I think it needs to be 4-5 for this to be really feeling good.
I think it needs to be 4-5 with full admittance that the goalposts have been moved when I say that. It's the sort of thing where if we're looking at the long term, or at least the long scope of everything going on this season, making the top six, fantastic. Love it. Brilliant. I also think that if you finish 4-5 and you're playing Atlanta, then your odds of winning a playoff series increase dramatically. And that's the thing. If you look, we can say, wow, the Knicks made the playoffs and no one thought they could.
Yeah.
That's great. I want to be able to say the Knicks made the playoffs and they won a playoff series, or at least were competitive in a playoff series, because I know they can be more competitive against a team like Atlanta, who they've beaten three times in three attempts this year, than having to face the Bucks in the playoffs when healthy, than having to face the Nets, especially if they get James Harden back, when having to face the Sixers in the first round, although that is highly unlikely to necessarily happen. So,
yeah, they're not going to play the Sixers in the first round. Well, actually, unless they fall,
they'd have to fall
to
eighth, which is rough. So, but I don't see that as happening. So, I think a 4-5 needs to occur just because the goalposts have been moved at this point.
No. Here's why I asked the question is, I guess, because I have less confidence than you that like the top six are a guarantee. And as we sit here right now, again, before the Clippers game. So let's just, I don't want to get into it because I've been writing about it all week. And if anybody's interested, go read the newsletters. But like more or less, if the Knicks win three more games, and it doesn't even need to be with the Celtics loss, it doesn't even need to, it's probably not going to need to include that last game against the Celtics. It might need to, probably won't. If the Knicks win three more games, they will be a top six seed. That's not 100% yet. Maybe by Monday it will be. I don't think so. But like more or less, if they win three more games, you could feel pretty good about the fact they're going to be a top six seed. Sitting here right now with five games to go, I am, and maybe this is going to sound ridiculous if they go out and blow the doors off the Clippers, but like, I can't sit here and be like, yeah, they're definitely getting three more. And because I can't say that, and the possibility in my mind exists realistically that they could fall to seventh and potentially lose a play-in game and then lose another play-in game, and then think about like what the narrative would be then and what are the odds of that happening? I don't know. Are they 10% or are they 15%? That's why for me, if you gave me a dotted line to sign on right now and you say, here, you're the sixth seed, take it or leave it, I am not hesitating. I'm signing for the sixth seed.
I'm not. I'm pushing my chips all in.
God bless you. You're youthful.
Well, look, why should we at this optimism. Point, right? The Knicks have been...
No, it's fine. I respect it. It's probably most people would probably agree with you. I guarantee you most people would agree with you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be in the minority here, but that's where I'm at.
There are also some interesting matchups in terms of the remaining games that these teams have.
So that's what I was going to get to. The key thing here is the Heat and the Celtics play twice, two in a row, starting tomorrow, Sunday. And also, as I'm going to go run and pick up my daughter for a second, so pause after I get done talking. The Washington Wizards and the Atlanta Hawks play two consecutive games. Now, you might say the Hawks are a better team than the Wizards. One, the Wizards have been one of the hottest teams in the league for over a month now. And two, the data suggests that it's really hard to win two games in a row against anybody this year. So I'm moving forward. And again, this factors into why I was saying I think three gets them a top six seed. I think those are most likely going to be splits where the Celtics take one, the Heat take one, the Hawks take one, the Wizards take one. And last thing I'm going to say, and I'll turn it over to you, is in terms of this idea that if we get the 4-5, it's going to be against the Hawks. I'm not so sure because of this top of the East situation, because guess who Miami plays down the stretch? I know you know it. They play the Bucks and they play the Sixers. And if those teams don't give a shit about those games, then where are we at? And I think that the Heat's last game of the season is against somebody not very good.
It's against Detroit.
There you go. So I think that there is a very real possibility that the Heat go 4-1 down the stretch, all things considered. And again, by the time you're listening to this, that already may be out the window and I may sound like an idiot. Although, no, I guess not, because if the win or lose, it's still on the table. Anyway, that's where I'm at.
I think the best thing that Knicks fans can hope for is that the Celtics and the Heat split their two games, as you're saying. Because when you're looking at the standings, the Celtics, if they win one of them, they get home court advantage, which is great for them. But the bigger thing here is that the Heat are ahead of the Celtics in the standings. And so we want both those teams to kind of stab at each other so that they kind of bring each other down.
And then the Hawks get in the 4-5. Yeah.
Right. But I agree. I think that Philadelphia could absolutely rest players. Milwaukee, maybe less so, because they would love to get home court advantage against the Nets. But who knows? Maybe at a certain point, Nets have clinched by then.
Yeah, it's too early to make any of these calls definitively. The only thing that I will say is that if you're someone who is like me and has more PTSD than Jeremy does, and you just want to get in the top six, you're not rooting for a split with Boston and Miami. You're rooting for a sweep. The problem there is that those games are in Boston, and so with the Heat having the one game lead. It makes it that much more likely that the team who's going to sweep will be the Heat. So,
but what I'm saying is you don't want Boston to sweep because of the fact.
No, I agree with you. You don't want Boston to sweep, but if you're
two games back, and then you don't want Boston to have to play with some fire that last game of the season.
I completely, but I'm saying if you just want a top six seed, you would want the Heat to sweep, because if the Heat sweep, then it becomes almost impossible to envision a scenario where the Knicks aren't getting in the top six.
Yes. If you are scared of the past, then that is exactly what you would
just
want.
Just call me names. It's fine. It's okay.
If you're like John and you're just terrified of the what ifs, then that's the case.
Listen, I'm a dad now, a dad two times over. You see this when you become a father, you get very risk averse. There you go. You get very risk averse.
Well, I'm naturally risk averse, and yet I'm all in on this. So
can I just say one other thing?
Yes.
The scenario that I outlined before where the Knicks fall to seventh and lose two playing games and they're out. I guess unless they got what would be a 2.5% chance to move into the top four of the lottery, which crazy shit has happened. But anyway, assuming that they lost and they didn't move into the top four of the lottery, like how depressing that would be in terms of an end of the season. I almost think a close second would be if they played the Hawks in the 4-5 and they got beat like in five games or something. Because people would go into that series being like, oh, it's the Hawks. We'll beat the Hawks. It's the fucking Hawks. I have, I don't know. I know we've beaten them three times this year. I have a lot of respect for that Hawks team. I don't think that series would be a cakewalk at all. But again, this is negative Nancy John talking here. So what the fuck do I know?
I think there's a difference between a Lloyd Pierce-led Hawks team and a Nate McMillan-led Hawks team. And we saw the Nate McMillan team. It's unquestionably better. So
yes, it is.
It's not like, it's not a walk in the park. They're a good team. There's a reason why they're in fifth place. It's not just because the East sucks. It's not just because of COVID. They're legitimately talented. So.
Yeah. And look, not to be that guy, but I guess I'm going to be that guy. Trae Young went out injured in that last game. If he plays the whole rest of the game, do the Knicks win? Maybe they do. But it's a thing that happened. So, okay. Do we already make our predictions for this?
We did not.
Okay. So I won?
You did.
Okay.
I lost after the first two games.
Oh, yeah, because you said 1-3.
Well, because, you said 2-2.
I did. Okay. So this is the moment of truth. It's the moment of truth. Ooh, goodness gracious. So we should predict the games and the seed.
Sure. So the final five games are Sunday at the Clippers, Tuesday at the Lakers, Thursday at the against the Spurs at home.
Yeah.
Saturday against the Hornets at home, and then Sunday to finish the season out against the Celtics at Madison Square Garden.
I think they find a way to win three games, and I think they find a way to win three games, and I think. Hold on. God, I hate this. If the Heat go 4-1, they finish. I guess I have to fuck. All right, they win three games and they get the five seed.
All right. So 3-2 would have fit perfectly with the 14 games remaining that we would have had down the stretch. So for what I predicted, which I believe was 9-5. And I think you picked 8-6, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Something on those lines. I'm going to go with 4-1 since you took 3-2. I think that after a close Clippers loss, the Knicks find a way to beat the Lakers and then win the rest of the three. Well, I'm not going to pick 2-3. I choose not to. And if they're going to go 4-1, then they're going to be fourth seed. So I'll stand by that.
This is, I hope you're right. Just think the next time we record a podcast together, the season will be over. The regular season will be over. Obviously they will be playing another game. Wow. What a journey it's been. Yeah. We'll reflect on it, I'm sure, some more next week, but for right now, anything else from you, Jeremy, before we get out of here?
A couple things. Yes. Number one, last week we had talked to, or at least I had talked about Frankie Ntilikina's qualifying offer being $8 million. Someone was kind enough to remind me on Twitter that because he didn't hit starters criteria, it would be around $5 million. At the end of the day, it's really not going to matter because the Knicks likely aren't going to extend a qualifying offer to him anyway. But I just wanted to point that out because I hate the idea of misinformation out there. So take that as you will. I've got two pieces out this week, I believe, for the Strickland, one on Julius Randle, one on Luka Vildoza and how their contracts will affect things. And then looking at Producer's Corner, since Andrew cannot be with us because he...
Oh, don't do Producer's Corner.
Don't do Producer's Corner.
Don't do Producer's Corner.
Is there a particular reason why you don't want me to do it?
Everybody get vaccinated. That's all we want
to
say.
I think there's a reason why you don't want me
to say Andrew. Shout out to Andrew Claudio. He's not, again, he's not chiming in because he got vaccinated and he's under the weather. Everybody get vaccinated.
There's a significant day that is coming up that John does not want us to talk about.
No, happy Mother's Day again. You want to say hi?
No.
You don't?
Hi, everybody.
Anyway, all right. Thank you, Jeremy.
Happy birthday, John.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Don't forget to check out your podcast feed and your if you're on YouTube, that for the live stream after the Clippers game. Unless you're listening to this after the Clippers game, in which case, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Just, you know what? Here, constantly update your podcast stream.
for new episodes of the Knicks Film School podcast, go check out the Knicks Film School YouTube channel because there's tons of great stuff on there. Read Jeremy's stuff on the Strickland. Read all of the stuff on the Strickland. There's a great Jack Huntley piece this week about Pablo Prigioni and Luca Vildoza. There's a ton of other stuff on there I'm sure I'm forgetting. And then don't forget to check out our merch store, which
yes.
you could see if you're watching on YouTube in the background of Jeremy's. Sure. There's a New York We Here canvas that he got made, and that you can get that on a T-shirt. You can get that on all kinds of different things. So and you could find the link to the merchandise store anywhere you find our content. You're going to be my Twitter, Jeremy's Twitter, you know, all of that stuff. YouTube. Thank you for listening to another episode. We'll talk to you soon. And of course, let's go Knicks.